and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the MBOM podcast. I am super happy and grateful that you're joining me for today's episode of the show. And today's episode is a good one. This is an episode that just really resonated with where I'm at right now. I think that just coming off the last two and a half years of the pandemic, a portion of that being pregnant, going through birth, postpartum, and now having a beautiful little 7-month-old baby girl, and also being back at work part-time, I just feel like my nervous system is pretty fried. So we're going to talk about today somatics, how to regulate your nervous system with somatics and breath work. And I am really thrilled to have an amazing guest to talk about this. So we're going to be joined by Victoria Albina. Victoria is a master certified life coach, a UCSF trained family nurse practitioner and breathwork meditation guide. And she has a passion for helping women realize that they're their own best healer, which I love. And she helps them break free from codependency, perfectionism, and people pleasing to reclaim their joy. So in this episode, we dive into why Victoria decided to pursue this career of helping people with breathwork, somatics. We talk about what somatics is and how it benefits the nervous system, as well as how to incorporate these practices into our own lives, as well as how to share them with our students. So there's a really good kind of two-part practical aspect to this in terms of like, how do we weave this stuff into our classes and hold space for our students in this way? And then how do we hold space and give ourselves time and space to actually support our own nervous system? So I hope that this resonates with you as much as it did with me. And hopefully we can, you know, heal the world one nervous system at a time. I know that sounds a little bit cheesy, but truly, I think that the world would be a better place if we were talking about this and doing it more. So we're going to dive into it. But before we get there, I just want to give a shout out to Offering Tree. So grateful to Offering Tree for continuing to sponsor and support the show. Make sure you guys go give them some love. Check them out, offeringtree.com/MBOM. You can get a discount there. You can book a demo. You can get a seven-day free trial, all that good stuff. If you have any questions, make sure you reach out. And of course, you'll hear more about Offering Tree later on in the episode. So for now, we'll leave it there. I'll tell you more about them later. Let's get into this fabulous interview. Without further ado, here is Victoria. Well, welcome to the podcast today, Victoria. I'm excited to have you here with me today.
I'm so thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Where are you joining me from today?
I live on occupied Munsee Lenape land, also known as the Hudson Valley of New York State.
Oh, amazing. I'm sure it's beautiful this time of year.
Oh, it's gorgeous all year. I'm very, very, very lucky.
Amazing. And so we have so much good stuff to get into, but maybe let's start. Can you introduce yourself? Tell myself and listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Victoria Albina. I use she, her pronouns. I am a functional medicine nurse practitioner, master certified life coach, and breathwork meditation facilitator. I'm also the host of the Feminist Wellness Podcast. And my passion is to help humans socialized as women to reconnect with themselves, mind, body, and spirit, using somatic practices, thought work, and breathwork, so they can reclaim their lives from codependent, perfectionist, and people-pleasing habits.
Oh. And how much do we need that work?
Right? Especially at this point in the pandemic.
Oh my gosh. I just feel like there's so much collective like trauma and fear and grief. Yeah. So much that we've experienced over the last couple of years. And it's not to say that people haven't experienced big things in their individual and collective lives prior to the pandemic, but I just feel like as a collective, we've been going through so, so much over the last couple of years, just a lot of like heavy stuff to kind of process. And I feel like, especially, you know, there's mostly yoga teachers listening, like we're the space holders for that. Yet we also need space to process that ourselves, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, I'm excited to dive into that, but maybe let's hear a little bit more about how did you get into this? Like, how did you find a passion of breathwork, somatics, and all the other stuff that you do?
Yeah. So I've always been a nerd's nerd, super into nerding out. And I was really drawn to health since I was a really small kid. Growing up, folks called me the unregistered nurse, which is kind of funny because then I became a registered one. I've always just been fascinated by psychology and the human experience. So I went to NP school, I got a master's in public health, and I worked as a primary care provider for quite a while. And was already really interested in holistic medicine. I was an herbalist before that, a birth doula before NP school. And when I started my private practice in functional medicine, what I really started to notice and track, my brain really is interested in patterns and seeing the patterns and what's going on in people's lives and in the collective. I just recognized how much stress, distress, and trauma, our mindset, our lack of somatic connection, how much that was really the root cause, one of the root causes of so much of my patients' suffering, how much my focus was functional gastroenterology. And so how much my patients with irritable bowel syndrome, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, and a slew of digestive concerns, fatigue, thyroid, on and on, were really suffering from a dysregulation in their nervous systems. So like a true nerd, I set about to learn about it, studied polyvagal theory in depth, studied somatics at the Sensory Motor Psychotherapy Institute as a coach, somatic experiencing, really dove into the mind-body connection through the lens of somatic practices. And I can define what somatic means, though yoga teachers probably know, and started to see remarkable shifts in my patients' lives above and beyond what was happening with just the regular functional medicine testing and supplements and dietary change. The needle really started moving on their health overall. And so after some time and really with the impulse of the pandemic and my in-person clinic space closing, I closed the clinic and started coaching full-time, which has been absolutely amazing. And now I work with folks within a container of my 6-month program, Anchored, to work on mindset along with somatic presence, the importance of felt connection, felt experience, so we can change our lives. And it is absolutely amazing.
I love all of that. And yeah, I think that just in case people aren't familiar with somatics, I think it's something that I just kind of learned a little bit about over the last year. I'd love to hear a little bit if you could kind of define what that is and, you know, talk about what that is so people can learn more.
Totally. So soma comes from the Greek. It is a Greek word that means the body. I've recently heard it defined as, or translated rather, as the body in its wholeness, which I absolutely love. The Western medical system, we can start by throwing Descartes under the bus, but we've really been trained to see the mind as one thing and the body as another, right? We have all these clinicians for just your kidneys, just your liver, just your skin, and psychology for the mind. And what somatics helps us to do is to come back to reunify mind and body. And instead of privileging the thinking mind, I think, therefore I am, instead we learn to privilege the body, the intuition, the brilliance, the intelligence of the body as the thing that is carrying us through this life and can inform us around our lived experience and what we want and need under our socialization and our conditioning in white settler colonialism, late stage capitalism, and the patriarchy.
Amazing. That's definitely great to hear about and stuff that I just feel like, again, I'm like, yes, we need this. We need so much of this. And so can you tell me a little bit about like how using somatics can help heal? Like, I know you said integrating it with your patients, you were seeing the needle tick. Can you talk about like how this kind of actually works for healing?
Yeah. So when our nervous system is dysregulated, and I'll define that, our bodies are getting signals that are not from this time and place. So what that means is, you know, a client said the other day, she was at the mall and smelled her boyfriend from high school's mom's perfume on the air and immediately went into sympathetic, immediately went into fight or flight, was like mildly panicky. because her nervous system had picked up through the olfactory nerve in your nose, had picked up something that was once coded as a place of stress, right? She didn't have a good relationship with this woman. It was really stressful for many years. And her body went panic. And so then, everything in the body other than heart, lungs, and pumping blood to the hands and fists so you can fight or flight, everything in the middle of the animal gets slowed. So thyroid function, cognition, digestion, reproductive function, right? All of that grinds to a halt because your body's not an idiot. If there's an attack coming, you want to be prepared, right? So for example, I'll ask you, Amanda, if you were being chased by a lion, would you want your body to digest the cheeseburger you just ate?
Oh, definitely not.
Right? Like, come on, body, punch that thing in the nose or run like hell. Those are much better options than digestion.
And like, I certainly don't want a cramp from running from a lion. Like I don't want to get that cramp from digesting a burger while I'm trying to run from a lion.
Right. So you're either going to get diarrhea or you're going to be constipated. Makes logic, right? Makes science. So when we understand the nervous system and we understand what's being activated or triggered within us in different moments, we can start to map our nervous system. We can start to have an understanding of where we go, and this is super individual, with certain activators, right? With when certain things happen in our lives, we are primed to have a reaction as mammals. And so when we can understand, oh, raised voices sends me into sympathetic. When someone's slow to respond to a text or in conversation, my body from my inner children, from my child self, working hand in hand with my nervous system, that makes me feel unsafe. And so I shut down, right? I detach. I go into what's called dorsal shutdown or disconnection in the nervous system. And that's a state too, where everything in the middle grinds to a halt. So when we're looking at physical health concerns, or we're looking at issues like mood imbalances, depression, anxiety, stress responses, we can look to the nervous system for a window in to what's happening. And that not only can guide our healing by helping us to really reduce the blame, the shame, the guilt, right? Because it's not you, it's your animal, right? It's you as a mammal, right? It's your body running the show. And so once you can understand that, that's when we can bring in compassion, curiosity, and care. And we can learn to befriend these responses in our bodies instead of getting mad at them. I was coaching a woman last night with chronic health concerns, and she was saying, my body fails me. The days I don't have enough spoons, the days I can't get up and I can't do what I want to, or the days I have chronic pain. And what we can understand is your body's not failing you. It's doing exactly what it's meant to signal to you that something needs to change. Now, that sucks, right? Like, let's not sugarcoat it. Like, that's lousy. It's a challenging thing to have chronic health concerns. And I'm not out here being like hashtag positive vibes only BS, right? Like, and when we can understand what the body is doing, we can bring a whole different lens to our understanding of our lived experience. And we can give ourselves the gift of a pathway out of resistance of reality and towards acceptance of reality. And once we can accept the reality, we can make change. We can take action steps to shift what's going on in our nervous system, or if it's appropriate in that moment, to stay with the sadness, with the anger, with the disappointment, with whatever emotion is coming up within us from a place of not seeing our bodies, our mood, our somatic experience of life as our enemy, but rather as our body's only language for communication.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That's it's just so amazing the way that the body works. I feel like the more and more I learn about the body, I just feel like we're such amazing, like perfectly divine creations. And as you were speaking, something I was thinking about is how obviously our nervous system plays this super, super important role in, you know, allowing us to react to certain situations. Like, for example, I think hopefully most of us aren't encountering lions on a regular basis, but you know, I'm from Western Canada, so bears, cougars, that's a real possibility. And like, you don't want to get like a stomach cramp, like we said before, if there's like a bear coming at you. But I also think about how it's like, you know, say you're in an airport and your first flight has been super delayed and you like hear them paging your name over the intercom and you just take off running and you don't think about,
right,
like, do I have the stamina right now to run? And, you know, like, have I eaten recently? You know, we just don't think about those things. We just take off and do it because that's what we need to do in the moment. And that's where the nervous system serves us in this like really beautiful functional way. But I also think for a lot of us, particularly in North America, a lot of us live really privileged lives where we're not out hunting, gathering for our food. You know, we go to a supermarket, we get our stuff. We're not encountering day-to-day things that might cause us to be in fight or flight, yet we're still reacting with fight or flight. And so I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, ways that we kind of like manage our nervous system, because we can't always control like when we go into that stress mode. But I feel like at least for me, my experience has been like, sometimes I go into stress mode and after I'm like, I did not need to be that stressed. Like there was no lion, no, you know, like no lion was coming to eat me. Like if a lion's coming to get me, like we need to be in stress mode. But you know, I just got stressed over something that's like, you know, someone budged me in the grocery store line and I'm doing that kind of like, like fight or flight thing.
Right. Totally. Totally. And so I'll add, you know, there's some complexity here in terms of our hormone balance, our endocrine system, our adrenal glands, right? There's some complexity beyond mindset. And I think that's really important to add because mindset is vital. Somatics are vital. And I think we can gloss over the complexity, right? So I just want to name that. So when our nervous systems get activated, when we get fight or flight, you know, and we can bring this into the business realm so easily, a client doesn't continue, your post doesn't get enough likes, folks aren't opening your emails, right? Your class isn't full, your retreat doesn't sell out, et cetera, et cetera. Your body can perceive that as a threat, working in concert with your mindset. So let's start with the body and then shift to mindset. Does that work for you, Amanda?
Yeah, definitely.
Beautiful. So the first thing I invite people to do when they feel themselves going into fight or flight, which is sympathetic activation, or in disconnecting from the world, checking out, which is called dorsal, the dorsal vagal experience, which actually sounds like a band from the 70s, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like they headlined Woodstock or something, the dorsal vagal experience. So anyway, when we feel ourselves leaving that safe, secure, calm, connected place known as ventral vagal, the first thing I want to invite folks to do is to pause and actively name what's going on. So there are studies using functional MRI of something called affect labeling. And that shows that simply labeling the emotional state that we are currently in helps to calm the brain. So if you're feeling angry and you say out loud or in your head, you know, depending on if you're in the supermarket or in front of a client, oh, I feel angry. I feel frustrated. I feel sad. I feel disappointed. I feel joyful, right? When we name the state, the corresponding part of the brain actually reduces its stimulus. So the amygdala, for example, the fear center of the brain, when we state, I am fearful, I am scared right now, it stops lighting up so much in functional MRI. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's incredible.
So wild. God, I love science. So, so one, name the state. Really get present with what's going on for you emotionally and see if you can find an emotion word. One of the things I send my clients when we start Anchored is one of those emotion wheels. And I invite them to keep that with them all the time as we're learning how to feel our feelings, because so many of us, and particularly from codependent thought habits, We have absolutely shut down our somatic connection, our connection with our feelings. We just don't know what we're feeling most of the time. So even just this first step can be a complete game changer for those of us who have lived from the neck up, really disconnected from our bodies and our feelings, pushing through life, people pleasing through life, really trying to get along to go along, or go along to get along, either way, right? Not rock the proverbial apple cart. So naming the emotion. And the next step, and I know this is going to sound so annoying, like I know it, but try it and tell me it doesn't work. Next, we thank our body. We thank our nervous system. We thank our emotions. Because that signaling, that mood shift, that energetic within you is a gift from your body. It's your body actively communicating with you. And what's more beautiful than direct communication, right? And So really pausing to thank your nervous system, like, whew, I just got a rush of adrenaline. I just, the word in my mind is stressed or overwhelmed. Thank you, body. Thank you, mind. Thank you, inner children. Thank you, limbic system. Thank you for telling me what's going on below the level of my consciousness. I am grateful for that. Doesn't mean you have to like it. Doesn't mean you have to be like, oh yeah, again, all vibes only around here. Like you can still have the like concurrent thought of like, oh my God, I'm so annoyed that I'm angry again, while recognizing the anger is a beautiful signal.
So if you've been listening to the podcast for a couple of months, or you're a dedicated listener who's been with me for a couple of years, first of all, thank you. And second of all, you've probably heard me talk about Offering Tree so, so much. But the thing about it is sometimes we don't know if it's actually worth it for us or if it's actually right for us. And so instead of just taking my word for it, I want you to hear from a fellow yoga teacher who also wasn't sure if Offering Tree was for them and if the investment was going to be worth it, and actually ended up with some really, really great results by having a software program. All right, here is Carly B, who is the owner of Radical Rest Yoga.
You know, for years, there's always been this hovering, I should get a website. I should get a website. People don't know how to find me if they look me up after a class. There's nowhere to go. But I just never knew where to start. And when I got serious about doing this, you know, go it alone. Well, how am I going to do it? I have Zoom. So I looked into it. It felt very risky at the time. And there I am, because they let you kind of build it first, see how it looks before you press the button. And there I was talking to my husband, like, am I just going to be throwing away this investment of money to commit to this for a year when I don't even know if anybody's going to show up? And I made my money back within 2 weeks.
So if you've been feeling like you might be ready to take the leap and try out a software program, check out Offering Tree. They're simple and easy to use, plus very, very efficient and effective in upping your yoga business game. And they're also affordable. Plus, I also have a discount for you. So head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM to get that. All right, now back to the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I really like the practice of thanking your body, because it's like your body is doing something that can be really beneficial for you, right? Like you would really want that if you're running through an airport trying to, you know, make your flight. You don't have to stop over because you like got a poo or something. And same if, God forbid, a lion was chasing you. And I know as I was studying, I gave birth in February. And so as I was kind of learning and studying about birth, I was so amazed to hear like, if a woman feels that fight or flight, she can actually like stop the labor process. And I was like, what? That's crazy. And it's like that, like that definitely serves women nowadays in, you know, emergency situations, or say you're, God forbid, in the car and you have to get somewhere and that type of thing. But it's also like, can you imagine if you were traveling, say you're, you know, in a tribe that's traveling and you're giving birth and the enemy approaches you, like whether that's an animal or another tribe or something, it's like, you don't want to have to pop a squat and get that baby out before you can run.
Yeah. Yeah. That is such a great, I've never used that analogy before, and I absolutely love it. Birthing bodies are completely amazing. And yeah, I was a birth doula. I've spent, you know, a little corner of time on the labor and birth floor of a hospital, and yeah, humans giving birth are absolutely amazing and can really are in a very open state to really moving with the environment. It's really incredible. I love that example. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no worries. It was just on my mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's dope. Yeah. And mazel on the kiddo. That's great.
Thanks.
Yeah. So once we have named the state, thanked the body, from there, we scan the environment and we orient the environment. So earlier I said that a stress, distress, or trauma response activation in the nervous system is the body not remembering where, when, why, who you are. The body is shunting you back to an old time and place where this stimulus was a life threat. Yeah? So if there was a lot of yelling in your family and your partner, who's generally kind and loving and you have a beautiful relationship, raises their voice, your body may respond like you're 4 years old, 6 years old, and you're getting yelled at again. Right? And so your body will collapse into whatever response it learned as the way to support you so you could literally survive as a kiddo. So what we do is orient to the environment, which supports us in helping the nervous system to remember, I am a grown-ass Okay, I'll repeat. You don't have to put explicit on it. All right, restarting. I am a fully grown adult person. I am in my own living room. I am sitting on a very soft couch. I am wearing a nice fluffy sweater. I am holding a nice cup of tea. My 2 feet are on the floor. I am safe. I know, body, you don't feel safe. I honor that. And I'm just letting you know through felt sensation, right? Because just telling your body, you're safe, you're safe. Your body's like, no. No, that's why positive affirmations don't work if they're not tied with a somatic felt experience, because the body's like, yo, brain, you're cute and stuff, but I actually know so much more than you. I am evolutionarily so much older than the neocortex, the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that does cognition and executive function. And so the body's like, yeah, no, I'm going to keep freaking out because I don't know when or where I am. I must be six. This raised voice must be the end of absolutely everything. So when you, right? So we then orient ourselves. From there, we decide, using our cognitive function, whether it is appropriate to time and space for us to stay in the emotion, or if it is optimal to soothe our nervous system. And so I don't recommend just always jumping to soothing yourself, to taking deep breaths, to distracting yourself, to going into Shavasana, right? Because what we're doing there inadvertently is emotionally, spiritually, and somatically bypassing our lived experience. Sometimes it's appropriate if you're in the mall, if you're in a meeting, if you're teaching a class, if you're covered in children. You know, there are moments when we choose as our adult selves not to stay with the emotion. And there are times when, you know, we're home alone, right? Or we can get ourselves alone. We can get a few minutes to go cry in the bathroom, or we can go for a run, right? We can stay with the feeling in our body. And that's when we allow ourselves to process it all the way through the body, to let the body have whatever movement or stillness it wants and needs to move things through, right? So we're not just sublimating it. We're not just pushing it down, but we're letting ourselves shake. We're letting ourselves scream. We're letting ourselves sob. And my favorite place for sobbing, by the way, is the cold bathroom tile floor, because I find it to be the most full of pathos possible. What about you, Amanda? Or do you like to sob?
That's I was just thinking how I've been in this mother circle with a yoga therapist who was literally talking about that's her place when she needs to process some trauma, when she needs to let things out. It's like curling up in the floor, like a child, like curling up on the floor in the bathroom, like dark, lights off.
It like really, and I mean that in the like Greek sense of the word, like the pathos is serious when you're on cold tile. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For me, I feel like not the bathroom floor, but just like being in my bed feels very safe, and being able to even like pull the covers over my head. I feel like that's like a nice, just like I feel held that way. So I think that that kind of supports me quite a bit in terms of like being able to release those emotions. But this is a practice that, I mean, I find it challenging because growing up, part of my experience was like, you know, I'm sensitive and I'm an emotional kid. And so I have to have a hard conversation with my parents, and then I start crying and my dad says, stop crying. There's no need to cry. And so I feel like it's been kind of like, you know, put into me time and time again, like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. And so I have to be very intentional about, hey, there's a lot building up here. You know, I've done my other practices, like I've meditated on it, I've journaled on it, you know, does it still need to come out in some way? And for me, I'm not the type of person who can just crawl into bed and cry. It needs to like, it needs to be coming out, and then I need to let it come out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So remember, our nervous systems get their settings ages 0 to 7. And so that, which I will share, is also when the chakra system gets its alignment. We can go woo if you'd like, always ready for that. But yeah, what we learn ages 0 to 7 becomes our blueprint for living, our program for living, until we do the active work like you are doing to connect in somatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is something, again, this is something I think about quite a bit, just having a very, very small baby who, you know, she doesn't speak a language right now. So her way of communicating is grunting, whining, laughing, crying. And so I think our instinct is like, you want to make the crying stop, right? Like, my instant thought is like, she's crying, I want her to stop. But what I've really tried to practice is like, you know, it's okay to feel what you're feeling, because I want her to feel safe with whatever feeling she has. And I know she's just little, like she's going to have big emotions as she goes through toddlerhood and, you know, childhood and that type of thing. But I feel like even the practice now of hopefully she can start to understand, like, you know, it's okay that you're crying, you don't need to stop. But then me also doing my job of like, okay, was she like bitten by a bug? Does she need a diaper change? You know, is something hurting her? Her teeth coming in? Is she hungry? You know, because she can't communicate like, mama, I'm scared, or something like that.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense that one would want one's baby to stop crying for so many reasons. A, number one, wild love. Like, you made this animal out of your own bones. Like, you want everything to be perfect for it. A, number one. B, number two, high-pitched noises can be very activating for a nervous system. When do mammals make high-pitched noises?
When they're scared or in trouble.
Yeah. When something's biting their neck or their tender underbelly. So it's important, particularly for new parents, to say, feeling like, when your kid's scream cries in particular. Like, you're not a jerk, you're not a bad parent, you're not failing, you're a mammal. And if you're a chipmunk and another chipmunk is going squee, you're going to assume they're being murdered and you're next. So like a little compassion there, new parents. I mean, all parents, right? I feel like when my sister and I go to our parents' house for the holidays, all it is squeeing. We're Irish twins, we're clones, like, all we do is, right, in our 40s, all we do is chase each other around the kitchen hitting each other because we love each other so much.
I love that. That's amazing. So I'm curious, I think there's kind of two parts that I'd love to talk about with the time that we have, is like, one, as yoga teachers, how can we kind of bring these practices into our classes and our work with our students? And then two, how can we give ourselves the space for these practices? Because I think there's always a practice what you preach. And I think that especially when we're, you know, an empath or a caregiver, it's really important to make sure you are setting time aside to take care of yourself so that you are filling your cup up before you take care of others. So maybe we can start with the, you know, how do we kind of bring these practices or support our students with their nervous systems in our classes?
Yeah. So a couple things come to mind. If you're not regulated, you can't regulate the room, and you can't regulate your clients, and you can't regulate just anything, right? So we can look to quantum physics and we can understand that we all have an energetic field around us. Our cardiac rhythm literally changes the cardiac rhythm of people in a 3-foot radius around us. So if you're dysregulated walking into class, you are likely to dysregulate your students who don't have the skills and tools to regulate themselves. And you will be less able to help them regulate through co-regulation, right? Which is when we help others regulate their nervous system. Regulation meaning like a car, how much gas and how much brake is going into the system. Gas being sympathetic, fight or flight, brake being dorsal, checked out, disconnected, not present, right? And so we all need a little gas and a little brake all the time. And then we can go into the extremes of all gas or all brake, lion attack, collapse. So really checking in with yourself before class, during class, after class, and really attending to your own soma, your own body through things like a yoga practice, but also things like working with a somatic coach or a somatic therapist, and really to starting to take note of the patterns. What are the things before class, during class, after class that leave you feeling less than regulated and balanced in your own nervous system? Are there kinds of students? Are there kinds of questions? Are there smells in the room? Like, what is it that takes you out of yourself? And the more you can start by really naming that and really building intimacy with those things, the more you can regulate your nervous system around them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's great.
Yeah. Like I'll notice the other day in class, there was an older dude vocalizing very loudly in every pose, lots of grunting and sighing and just a lot of vocalization. And from the way back of the room, I could feel the teacher's nervous system getting dysregulated. I could feel her annoyance. I could feel her, like she just lost her center. She lost her ground. Is it causation or coincidence? But our tree pose wasn't as great. Like it's a class where I know most of the people in it were mostly all there at the same time. And our balance was really off collectively. Like our handstands were a hot mess, you know, as her system got dysregulated. So interesting, right? What is it about him vocalizing? Who in your past does that remind you of, right? Which of your inner children is getting activated here? What is the somatic or felt experience of that dysregulation? What does that part of you need so it can be soothed and so it can find safety and grounding with your adult self, with your most loving inner guardian, so it doesn't have to come out sideways and into the room?
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I think that as you were talking, I was thinking about how I've been in those classes too, where you can just sense that kind of, you know, something's off with the teacher. And I feel like one thing that's so challenging about being a yoga teacher is like the idea of just like leaving the stuff you have going on at the door, because sometimes that's so much easier said than done. Like if you've just had a big fight with your partner, or say you got laid off from a job, or you had a big fight with a kid or something, it's like, that's going to be on your mind. That's just the nature of how we are as like felt human beings. Right. And it's yet when you show up kind of with that tension and that energy, it's like, that is felt, right? It's hard. It's a hard job to be in when you are a human that lives like an everyday life. Right.
Well, I think one remedy, you know, on the pathway as you're working on learning how to regulate yourself is not to abandon yourself in those moments and to be really honest with your students. Right. So to walk into class and be like, hi, loves, I'm so happy to be here. I just want to name that I just had a challenging conversation and I am working to contain that within myself and to honor my nervous system so it doesn't impact our class. And I just want to name that maybe one of you hit traffic coming here. Maybe one of you ran out of gas on the way. Maybe one of you had a conversation with your boss that didn't go so well. And all feelings, all sensations, all experiences are welcome here, are honored here. And I don't want to invite you to choke anything down or deny anything or negate anything you're feeling. And I want you to know that I'm doing the same. I'm really honoring that I had a real challenge before class, and that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I love that. I think that that's a beautiful way to approach it. It's like you don't have to kind of dump your stuff on your students, but you can also be honest with your students about, you know, where you're at and what's going on, and that something challenging happened, and then relate it back to other people. Because I feel like that's a way of allowing people to feel heard and felt too, because I'm sure that probably everyone in the class can relate to dealing with their own stuff. So,
And, you know, when we going back to raising kids, when we look at, or I can, from my experience with my clients, many of them report feeling very conflict averse in their lives. Sometimes it's from growing up in a family with lots of yelling and lots of actual unsafety around disagreements or conflict. And often it was that conflict between caregivers was secret and silent, right? They never saw healthy communication or healthy disagreement. So my sister, who's a parenting coach, she and her husband, like I've watched them disagree in front of their kids in the most loving ways, right? Like they hold each other's hands and look in each other's eyes. And I've heard her look, like she'll look at her husband and she'll say, "Derek, you were just a real jerk and I don't like the way you behaved." And he'll say, "You know what? I'm with you. Like I was a total schmuck right there." And the kids are just watching and they're learning, right? Their nervous systems are coming to understand that conflict doesn't have to be terrible. And I think that we can carry that into the yoga room to really name what's going on for us and model like it's okay, right?
Yeah, for sure. Because I think that is, I mean, those are two areas that I think sometimes we think that like, hey, we have to show up 100%. And that's how we're going to be the best, you know, role model for our students or for our kids. But I think that being able to show up even in the moments where you're facing challenges and be honest about that. Without that, I think the key here is that you're not, you know, sitting down and telling your students the story of what happened and kind of putting that on them, right? Like there's a total difference between being like, hey, you know, I'm showing up here today. Something happened this morning that's just thrown me off a little bit. You know, can anyone relate to this feeling? Now we're going to work with this in our practice versus like, yeah, 20-minute monologue about the fight you had with your mom or your spouse or your kid or whatever. And it's the same with your kids, I think too. It's like, there's a difference between having like a full-blown fight in front of your kids and showing that like, hey, you know, there's conflict resolution that happens and that disagreeing with somebody or feeling like something somebody said hurt your feelings is like a totally normal part of life.
Totally. And I think to be able to do that with aplomb, we need to look at where are the legacies, the familial blueprint of things like codependent perfectionist and people-pleasing habits are showing up in our lives. Because from perfectionism and people-pleasing, the thing that's most important is that other people think well of us above all, right? And from a codependent mindset, we don't feel worthy of love. And I can define codependency the way I think of it, which is the chronic and habitual outsourcing of our sense of value, wellness, and worth in the world to everyone and everything outside of us instead of from and to ourselves. So if we're looking for it, right, everyone else to tell us we're worthy of love, then yeah, we want to go on the 20-minute monologue. We want to tell everyone what a jerk our partner is and like how they totally messed up and like they're totally to blame. Don't you all agree? Will you have my back on this? Right? From that insecurity about our value, we want to make it all about us so we can get external validation instead of just owning what's up, connecting with our feelings and releasing the rest.
Right. And I think that this kind of naturally segues into this point of like, how do we make sure that as yoga teachers, as wellness professionals, as space holders, caregivers, we're showing up with the capacity to be conscious enough to be like, yes, there's something going on. I'm going to acknowledge it, but I'm still going to hold space for other people.
Presence, deep and grounded embodied presence. It is from presence that we're able to give with an open heart. It is from presence that we're able to set healthy boundaries. We're able to know our limits. we're able to state our yes and no from that, that state of unequivocally having our own backs. And that is a practice, right? It's not like there's some magic pill of presence, but it is that daily practice of coming back home to ourselves, checking in with ourselves, and reminding ourselves that we are of value beyond our productivity. We are of value regardless of what others think, say, feel, do, right? We are of value simply because we exist. Meditation, yoga, these things have been endlessly helpful for me in my own life as gateways into greater presence. Thought work, which I teach my clients, can be incredibly helpful, where we start to really take a thoughtfully, lovingly, compassionately critical look at the voice in our head. Because most often the thoughts we're thinking about ourselves and the world are not coming from us, right? They're coming from a parent or some other, someone who modeled that way of thinking. They're coming from the patriarchy. They're coming from forces outside of ourselves. And we believe them because it's what we always heard, right? A belief is just something you've heard over and over and over again until a neural groove is created in your mind and it becomes a solidified belief. And so using thought work to really take a look at the thoughts and then using somatic practices to really connect in with the felt experience of those thoughts, using things like polyvagal theory combined with somatics to really get in touch with the felt experience in our bodies, all of these practices together help us to come into that grounded presence that comes from developing deep self-intimacy, like really just knowing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So if somebody is thinking like, hey, this sounds amazing. I really want to bring this into my classes. I want to bring this into my own life. And they're not sure if they're doing these practices or not, you know, what do these practices look like?
Yeah. So to answer the first part of that, so what do somatic practices look like? It's anytime we really slow things down and come into presence with the felt experience of being ourselves as an animal in this moment. So getting out of the head, getting out of thinking and overthinking, and coming back into the body to listen for and connect with the body's signal about what's going on for us in that moment, right? So let's say we feel anger. We pause, we get into presence, we connect with the breath, we connect in with our body, and we ask our body, how is anger showing up for me? And so then we can ask ourselves, where in the body is it showing up? I'll just say the belly. What is the color? And I'll go with the cliches here because it's easiest. Red, temperature, hot. Is it moving? Oh, yes, it's radiating in my belly. It's like vibrating anger. It's heavy. And so as we really paint a picture for ourselves, we can get into deeper intimacy with what anger feels like in this moment for us. And we can then, in conversation, ask that energy what it needs, right? Does it need movement? Do you need to run around the house? Often anger, often sympathetic, needs movement to be processed. If it's more of a dorsal experience, like there's a sad, heavy blue feeling in my chest, that might want the cold bathroom floor or a snuggle in bed or to co-regulate with an animal or another human or with nature. But really, we don't know till we ask the sensation in our body what it needs. And then with love and care, can do everything in our power in that moment to give ourselves what we need or to be in active conversation with our body, like we talked about earlier, to say, anger, I love you. Thank you for being here. I really want to attend to you. And I'm in this board meeting and I can't run around the block right now. And I promise you that I will move with you as soon as I'm able, which sends such a different message to the body than like, oh, just get over it, right? Like I'm a yoga teacher. I'm supposed to be all equanimity should be my middle name. I shouldn't be angry or annoyed. Right. So instead of shutting down the body and our felt experience, we are building a real conversation, a real intimacy, a real friendship with our body. Now, One really simple somatic practice we can do that is more of the like, I can't be with it right now. Like I can't help is this really simple one. So I want to invite folks listening who have the capacity to move your hands to take two hands. If you're not driving, safety first, please, and put them in front of you. And if your hands don't move, if you don't have the capacity to move your hands, we honor that. And I want to invite you to picture hands, to use your visual cortex to visualize hands. And so you take your thumb and you touch it to each of your fingers, right? Your first finger, middle finger, ring finger, pinky, slowly counting. And we move slowly if we're in sympathetic, if we're in fight or flight. And if we're in dorsal, if we're checked out and we want to come back into presence, right? You know, when your mind goes blank in a challenging conversation, for example, or you're teaching class and you something, you know, like the guy grunting and your body is just like, ah, shut down, step out, don't be here. But you're 10 minutes in the class, you got to be there. You could tap your thumbs to your fingers with a little more quickness to bring in a little more activation energy into the nervous system. So it would be slow, would be thumb to pointer finger, and you'd say one, New York finger two, ring finger three, pinky four. And then you'd come back from pinky to your first finger. And then with a quickness, one, two, three, four, three, two, one. If you wanted to bring in a little activation energy. And I mean, frankly, like as not a yoga teacher, but as I go to yoga 6 days a week, and if a teacher stopped and was like, hey, all my nervous system just got a little dysregulated, I want to share this practice with you. This is like a super cool tool you can use. I would think that was like the coolest thing ever.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing that. I was doing it along with you as you were talking.
Isn't it cool? It's so dope. And it's free. It's accessible for most humans. Not all, of course, going to name that, but for most humans who can move their hands, it's a super dope practice.
Yeah. And it's, very, very simple. Cause I think sometimes we think like, oh, these things have to be complex, or we need, you know, the perfect setting. Like we need our altar space and our candles and our music. And I love all of that. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm definitely not hating on that, but it's like, sometimes we just need to do these practices quickly. Like we don't have time to do all the other stuff. And I just really love that you gave something that is just so simple and accessible to people.
Thank you. And I love doing it below Zoom, like when I'm on Zoom, like you can do it in your lap. You can also like tap your fingers on your face. People just think you're like futzing, right? It doesn't have to like be a thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I feel like I could just keep picking your brain forever, but I know we need to wrap up here. So I just really appreciate everything you've shared today, Victoria, and all these great practices. But if people want to learn more about you, if they want to learn from you, perhaps work with you, where can they go to find all of that?
Yeah. So you can head over to my website, victorialbina.com, and I have a present.
We love presents here.
We love presents. Yay. So if you go to victorialbina.com/MBOM, MBOM, you can download a suite of meditations just for your listeners. Isn't that fun?
That's amazing. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, my pleasure. So there's an orienting exercise, and it was that nervous system exercise we talked about, boundaries, inner child. It's a delight and it's free. MBOM, victorialbina.com/MBOM. So you can find me there. My podcast is called Feminist Wellness. It's free in all of the places. You can follow me on the gram. I give good gram at Victoria Albino Wellness.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been an amazing, such amazing conversation.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast. Hopefully you're feeling inspired or re-inspired to take care of your nervous system and to support your nervous system so you can support other people and so much more. Huge shout out to Victoria for being on the show. Thank you so much, Victoria. I love this episode. A big thank you to Offering Tree for sponsoring this episode. Please make sure you go give them some love, offeringtree.com/MBOM. And thank you to you. I am so grateful that you are here listening to the show. I know I say it many, many weeks, and it's just really the truth. I honestly couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much for being here, for supporting the show, for all your kind words about the show, and so much more. All right, I will see you next week. Bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomeyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomeyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.